Welcome to the Interesting Football Podcast. This week, we will give a definitive answer to the question, are Brighton and Hove Albion interesting? I'm joined by former NatWest Bank employee, Simon Day. Mr. Day, how are you? And what are your first thoughts when you hear the name Brighton and Hove Albion?
I am excellent. And my first thoughts when I hear Brighton, go back to the mid to late 80s when on the Arsenal podcast, I mentioned that Arsenal was the first game I went to. A couple of years after that, my dad took me to a couple of Brighton and Hove Albion home games in about 1987. I have absolutely no idea why. My best guess is that mum was shopping on a Saturday afternoon and dad didn't want to go around the shop, so took me to the football. I can remember this was back in like the Goldstone days. I'm sure there was a couple of like big names playing for Brighton back then. Like, I think Danny Wilson would have been playing.
Steve Foster?
Steve Foster would have still been there. Mortimer, Dennis Mortimer, was it? He used to play for Aston Villa. But they were sort of a second division club or second tier club. And I've no idea why my dad took me there. And I never went to the Goldstone after those two occasions.
I can say it's a weird one to go from the Medway area to Brighton.
But us Medway lads, we love a trip to the coast, don't we? That's like...
No, fair enough. I mean, for me, it has to be the playoff semi-final when Wednesday reached the championship final in, was it 2015, 2016? We played Brighton in the semis. Brighton were by far the best team in the playoffs. And just shows you how unlucky or how unfair the playoffs can be. First leg was at Hillsborough. And after 50 minutes, Brighton had had four of their key players come off injured. It was a weird one that we played the best team in the playoffs, 1-2-0. And I was actually pretty disappointed at the end of the night. Like, we had them there for the taking. Didn't matter in the end. But also one of the best atmospheres, I think, in my life at Hillsborough. I wasn't there. I watched it about 5 o'clock in the morning from South Korea. But, the phones, the lights on, all three sides full of Wednesday fans bouncing up and down. Yeah, it did look pretty fantastic. So those are my thoughts of Brighton.
Was that the current stadium, was it?
The second leg was at Brighton's current stadium,
Is it the Amex? Right, okay. Yes. Fine. Talking of the playoffs, that reminded me of sort of how unfair the playoffs are. My local team, Kidderminster, who are in the Conference North, and about 5 years ago, they finished second in the division, just missed out on automatic promotion, and then had to play in the playoffs for like 3 rounds. There's like quarterfinal, semi-final, final, but it's slightly weighted. So they had to play whoever finished, I think, 6th maybe in the first round of the playoffs. And they finished in the league something ridiculous, like 25 points ahead of them. And the away leg of the playoffs, Kidderminster won 2-0. And then they lost the home leg 3-0.
Wow.
That's like...
that's a kick in the testicles, that is, isn't it?
In a way, they've only got themselves to blame. But also, it's like, clearly, you're like comprehensively the better team here. But you've had one mad hour and you're out. That's your whole season in ruins.
Indeed. Right, well, Simon Day, let's see. Arsenal, remember, are the lineal title holders.
Yes.
Let's see whether Brighton can take that belt off them. What's our first fact?
First fact is probably what I'd associate most with Brighton, but I didn't want to say it at the start. Between 1997 and 1999, Brighton played their home games 70 miles away from Brighton at Priestfield Stadium, Gillingham.
Damn, 70 miles. Is that the furthest a team has travelled for a home game?
For a home game for 2 years? I honestly can't think of anything even remotely close to that. I mean, there have been ground sharing before, haven't there? Like Charlton played at Selhurst Park, didn't they, for a few years. That it has happened before. Well, but it was going to be Millwall. Before Gillingham were chosen, so to speak, it was going to be at the Den.
It seems a bit more sensible with transport, right? Just a straight journey up to London.
Yeah. But it ended up being Priestfield. I've no idea why. I mean, I can't... What's the equivalent of that now? I mean, I'm not very good with geography. What's a 70-mile trip that a team could make?
I'm not sure, but I think there might be a Scottish club that might beat that. Remember Gretna Yes, we talked about Gretna before, didn't we? And they got into the Premier League. Their ground wasn't up to standard, so they played at Motherwell. I'm going to apologise for my lack of geographical knowledge here, but I don't know the distance between Gretna and Motherwell off the top of my head.
God, and you did it. Did you do a GCSE geography?
That was my 1A star, yeah.
Oh, so yeah, but now it transpires. You know nothing about it. Right. Well, I mean, the best comparison I can think is if Gillingham had to play their home games at Brighton. That's like, that's about 70 miles, isn't it?
It is indeed. And I can tell you now that Gretna to Motherwell is 74.5 miles. So there
That's clearly not a live project, though, is it? Gretna are long gone, aren't they?
Sadly deceased, yes.
So anyway, yeah, they played it. It was a complete farce, by the way. I went to a few games because I worked around the corner and...
Average attendance of 15?
Average
attendance of 15?
It was about 1,500. So, yeah, not. Wow. It was pretty low. There's a few games where you're like, yeah, they're putting the crowd out at 1,012 or something, but there's blatantly less than 1,000 people here. Because at the time, like regardless... Brighton, sorry?
For a big town like Brighton, getting 30,000 a week, that's criminal, that, isn't it?
But the thing was, it was around a time when, and I'll mention in a moment, Brighton were A, shit, and B, very, very anti the ownership. Bill Archer and the other chap, whose name escapes me, were the owners at the time, and were basically running the club into the ground. So there was a big boycott of the club as well at the time. Right. And from the games I went to, it was basically just a few fans singing songs against the ownership and not really paying much attention to the football. Understandable because the football was absolutely dreadful.
I imagine it must have been one of the deadest atmospheres going.
They went during the first season there. I mean, the second season there, they finished something like fourth bottom. They're in whatever the bottom division was called at the time, probably Division 3 back then, wasn't it, I think?
Right.
The second season, they finished like fourth bottom or something. The first season, they managed to go 12 home games without a win, which is a pretty ridiculous stat for a home team. They ended the season in 91st place in the Football League on 35 points, which in 99% of seasons would get you relegated 35 points. But somehow or other, Doncaster finished the season on 20 points.
Wow.
From 46 matches.
Doncaster. Did they not have an owner who tried to burn the club down at the time?
That was around that time, yeah.
Right. So, come on, Brighton, you weren't happy with the hardship. It could have been worse. At least you didn't try to burn you down, literally.
My only two sort of good memories from this were in the second season, me and my dad went on Boxing Day, because you have to go to football on Boxing Day, and Gillingham were away somewhere distant. And we went to watch Brighton Colchester on Boxing Day, and it was a 4-4 draw. And it was legit one of the best sort of bonkers matches I've ever been to. It was like Brighton were 3-0 down at half time, absolutely rubbish. And then some on loan bloke who no one had heard of scored a hat trick in the second half in about a quarter of an hour. And then Colchester went back ahead and Brighton scored a penalty with the last kick of the game to get a draw out of it.
So what other kind of crazy ground shares have we had? Tottenham at Wembley was a pretty weird one.
Hey, that's true. Tottenham at
Coventry.
Wembley.
Coventry went down to Northampton, didn't they?
They went down to Northampton. And then, funnily enough, I went a couple of seasons ago to watch them play at St Andrews.
Right, Birmingham City, yeah, of course.
Was ridiculous because they just opened 1.5 stands. So it was like going to watch a pre-season friendly. And when it's like that, it kind of doesn't matter how good the game is, does it? It just feels dead.
I mean, you go to live sporting events for the atmosphere, right? I mean, that's...
To an extent, yeah. I mean, clearly you want entertainment. But for a sport like football, don't get me wrong, there's not much atmosphere or entertainment at a Gillingham game these days. But at least if sort of there's people in all four stands, there's something going on. But no, it was just soulless. And at Gillingham, well, I say at Gillingham, when Brighton played at Gillingham, it was absolutely dead.
And I'm glad you chose this as your first fact. Well, one, 70, you know, playing your home game 70 miles away from home for 2 years is pretty interesting. Yes. And secondly, it takes us on nicely to the quiz, So I, you know, when I think of one of the things I think of first of Brighton's, yeah, the fact that they have played at quite, you know, four grounds I can think of off the top of my head in my lifetime.
Yes, we'll get on to that in a bit, yeah.
But yeah, so I wanted to get something with new grounds and old grounds. Okay. And this got me onto, you know, while I was doing my research, found a very interesting page. Apologies, Brighton fans, this isn't too Brighton heavy, this quiz. But since the inception of the Premier League, so 15th of August 1992, 11 stadia, yeah, I prefer the wanky stadia rather than stadium, 11 stadia have hosted Premier League matches but no longer exist.
Oh, that's a great question.
I think so as well.
I agree with that.
I'm going to give you, I've got a couple of geographical, you know, I've set par at 7. If that's too tough, it looks, I've got a couple of geographical pointers that might help you out. But Mr. Day, you have got 1 minute to name the 11 stadia. I'll let you off the team names. 11 stadia that have hosted Premier League football but no longer exist. Your minute starts now.
Highbury.
Yes.
Upton Park.
That's 2.
White Hart Lane.
3.
Main Road.
4.
Ayrton Park.
Yes, that's 5.
Baseball ground.
Oh my word, storming at 6, 40 seconds to go.
The Dell.
There's 7.
What's par?
7, you're on par already.
Oh man, now
30
I'm stuck.
Seconds to get 1 and 4.
Oh, the 1 and 4, right, hang on, let's think. He's been up and down. Oh, Vocal Park.
There we go, 8, let's keep going. 20 seconds.
I can't think of any more. Filbert Street.
Oh my word, 9.
Must be another London club.
7 seconds to go.
I've said Vocal Park. I don't know, that's no good, is it? No, I'm gone.
Okay, but that's a fantastic effort. 9, smashed par there. It is a big victory, which takes up to 2-2 now, doesn't it? Because you lost Arsenal, you lost Brentford, you won Villa, and now you've won the Brighton quiz. The two you missed out on were Burnden Park, Bolton, and Highfield Road, hosted, Coventry.
Burnden Park hosted Premier League football.
It did indeed. In fact, wow. Coventry, we mentioned.
Oh, Coventry, yeah, I should have got that one. Should have got that one.
1997, Burnden Park died. So, yeah, had possibly a couple of years of Premier League football.
That's a ground I can remember absolutely nothing of. I mean, I've never been, but a lot of these grounds you mentioned, like Filbert Street or the Dow, you can picture in your head slightly, can't you?
Right.
But Burnden Park, absolutely nothing comes into my head.
True. I'm the same. I can picture all of those. Ayrton Park, I'm not sure I can picture.
No, that's a fair point. Fair point.
Burnden Park as well. Yeah, definitely not.
Not a jot.
Mr. Day,
but anyway,
Mr. Day,
that's that.
Fact number 2. Congratulations. Sorry, where are my manners?
Yeah, sorry.
Fact number 2.
Yeah, I'm on a high now. I just need to come down a little bit. Right. Fact number 2. Brighton, after the Priestfield debacle, then moved on to the Withdean Stadium, which is an athletics track in just outside of Brighton, so it's a bit nearer than 70 miles. But the fun fact here was, for the players to access the pitch from the changing rooms, they had to go over a wooden footbridge.
Oh, wow. That's Sunday League, that, isn't it?
Because the only way that away fans could get to the away section of the stadium was to walk along the athletics track that separated them from the football pitch. So to avoid the players walking past the fans as they went to the pitch, they built a little wooden footbridge over them.
Wow, that's to be fair, Brighton were in the fourth tier at the time. Well, how high up did
they went? No. They were when they first moved to the Withdean, and the footbridge wasn't there for the full 10 years they were there. They did have to make loads of adjustments to the stadium because it was just some piddly athletics venue. It was even possible to shoot so wide of the goal that the ball went in the hammer net. In the corner. I went there once. It was just a farcical place to go and watch football. You're so far away from the pitch. The sight lines are terrible. You have to get a park and ride to get to the ground because it's in like, and I, there might be exceptions to this. It's the only football ground I can think of that's in quite a posh area. So it's all like, ooh, it's surrounded by like mock Tudor mansions and whatever. So obviously these NIMBY residents are having none of you parking outside. So everyone has to get a park and ride from a few miles away.
There's a good question. Football stadia in the poshest areas. Oh, Rushden and Diamonds, I don't think are in the Football League anymore, but they were in that small...
Earthlingborough,
that's the one. Yeah, which is quite a nice... well, definitely the smallest place. Any others?
Any other football grounds that are in quite, quite picturesque areas? I can't think, because even the ones... Even the ones that are in towns that you think, oh, that sounds like a nice place. I went to Burton last month. You kind of think somewhere like Burton's quite a nice little town, don't you?
Right.
But where the football ground is, isn't. It's just it's a bit out of town in a fairly sort of industrial estate type area.
Dumbarton Stadium is right in front of Dumbarton Rock.
I've seen pictures of this. Yes, I've seen pictures of this. It still looks very pretty, doesn't it, from the in the stadium looking. Yeah. I don't know if that classifies as posh, but yeah, it does look pretty.
Yeah.
Because the local residents weren't happy about all this, Brighton could only play music for 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say it's not a bad thing, but no, it is really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I find it odd that some of these Premier League clubs, I know Manchester United do this, and I suspect others do, they sort of put out on social media or wherever on the day of a game what the playlist is going to be for the hour up to the game.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Who cares? is there a single person who cares what song is being played at Old Trafford at 2:10?
Probably not.
Even if you're sat at your seat at that time, are you really going to care? I'm guessing it's owned by Oasis. No, it won't be Oasis, will it? It'll be Stone Roses, I'm guessing. Happy Mondays, maybe. But
at least teams don't play music after goals anymore, because that was a thing for a while, wasn't it?
It was a thing for a while. And I remember the season it was introduced, someone asked me, did Gillingham do this? And I realised then I'd been to 3 home games and not seen a score. So I wasn't sure whether we did or not. I think we did. And I think it was the obligatory Tom Harkes. That sort of nonsense.
Oh, yeah. I hate that stuff. I think it was one of those things. It was universally unpopular. I don't ever speak to any football fans. You know what? I really love the fact that they start playing music after we score. I never met anyone who, people secretly loved it, but
I enjoy celebrating a goal, but I know what would really enhance it. It's a bit of Kasabian, wouldn't it? That really helped matters.
And I like taking things from other sports, from other countries or something, but I just feel like English football stadia, the celebrations after a goal are not something that you really need to add something to. They're already great. You know, it's already, you see the passion, the limbs going around everywhere when it's a big game. I don't think that it's crying out for, oh, we need more, we need more.
Yeah, I'm okay if it's something a bit quirky. I quite like at Tampa Bay in the NFL. They've got a pirate ship that overlooks the stadium, and whenever Tampa Bay score a point, they let off a cannon. So obviously, if they get a touchdown, they let off 6. If they get a field goal, they let off 3, one for an extra point. Yeah, each point they score, there's a cannon. Nice. I think that's all right.
Yeah, but the American sports as well. I feel like, you know, scoring, you know, football. A goal is such a rare event compared to point scoring in other sports.
I suppose ice hockey is probably the nearest to the American sports, isn't it?
Yeah, and even that one, I mean, an average score.
Yeah, clearly there's more. Clearly there's more.
I wonder what an ice hockey average score is. Maybe I'm way out with 5-3.
I think that's pretty good.
So I think, football, I mean, we don't need extra to celebrate the goal.
Is that gone now? Does nobody do that?
I feel like some team, I feel it's probably a thing somewhere, but I've not heard it for a long time.
No, it just irritates me.
There we go. So let's go on to the bizarre fan now. And I have got a bizarre one. So Brighton got quite a few celebrity fans. So Fatboy Slim's an obvious one, but I don't really see him as a bizarre figure. What I was thinking about was Des Lynam, but he didn't make the cut in the end. Somebody a bit more bizarre and this is probably quite tenuous of the fan, he wore a rosette on BBC when they played in the 83 FA Cup final.
Okay.
And this is the weatherman Michael Fish.
Really? Yes. Michael Fish?
Well, he's from the area. I don't think he's like a hardcore. I don't think he's got like a seagull tattoo on his arm or anything like that. But, you know, he wore a rosette when they were in the FA Cup final. He's from the area. I'm taking that. I'm taking that. It's not like one of those Hollywood celebs who like...
Yeah, and also Michael Fish's tattoo will be of the sun, won't it, or a cloud, I'd imagine. Is he still alive?
He is still alive, yes.
Oh, well done. Well done,
I was quite surprised about that. And yeah, other things about Michael Fish has had has featured in two songs. Rachel and Nikki in 1985 released a song called I Wish He Was Like Michael Fish.
I know the other one, but I didn't know that one.
That one didn't make to the charts, but he did get into the top 10 with Gorm. What's the other one?
Is it the Wurzels? Michael Fish is a weatherman.
Oh, no. It's a Tribe of Toffs, and it's actually John Ketley is a weatherman.
Oh, John Ketley is a weatherman, and so is Michael Fish.
That's right.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Oh, I thought, for some reason, I assumed that was the Wurzels of, like, I am a cider drinker, and...
That's a terrible guess, to be fair, is it? I mean, it's not...
No, I assumed it was just them, but okay. Yeah, John Ketley's I'm aware of.
If you said like the Stone Roses or something like that, you know, I think I'd be able to mock you for that. But the Wurzels, I don't think it's I don't think you're a mile off, are you?
No. So Fish, his sort of what he's most known for, unfortunately, was wrongly predicting the storm in 1987, wasn't it?
Indeed.
He was the one who said nothing to worry about, and then like the country got flattened the next morning, didn't it?
And he tried to, a few years later, he tried to weasel out of it by saying, oh, I wasn't talking about the UK, which is up there with one of the worst excuses when you're delivering the weather forecast for the UK. Oh, I meant it wouldn't happen in Mexico.
Which is why, I think this sort of cock-up is the reason now that the weather, you get these ridiculous things like, it'll say like there's an 80% chance of rain every day, won't it? Or it will never be 0 or 100. It'll always be something in between. So if it's wrong, they'll go, well, we said there was a chance it might not happen. So, yeah, I think Fish is to blame for that.
Yeah, poor old Mickey Fish. I mean, you know, he's obviously produced great service to the BBC for decades. And, yeah, he's always going to be remembered for... To be fair, it is a fairly monumental cock-up. It's not like, you know, he got the weather wrong one day. It's like literally the worst weather of our lives. He mocked it.
Before.
Of course it's not going to happen, you losers.
It's not like he said, oh, it's going to be 22 and it ended up being 24. It's not quite like that, is it? It was a bit more of a fuck-up than that. Although I always preferred McCaskill when it came to weathermen.
Why?
And his voice, he had a great voice, McCaskill, didn't he? And
fair enough.
Yeah, I was a McCaskill fan. But yeah, Fish was probably the most famous. Anyway, and now we know he's a Brighton.
Unofficial quiz. How many people died in the Great Storm of 1987?
I don't know about Pete. I know the six of the seven Oaks went down, didn't they? How many people? 250.
22.
Oh, man. There you go. It's like the COVID stats there. I was including people who died 30 days after the storm.
I like it.
And lived in a storm-affected area. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, six of the seven Oaks went down, didn't they?
Yes. I'm not sure how many went down, but yeah, definitely a few.
I assume they replanted them.
Yes, they did. So, Mike, I mean, obviously, you know, Osama bin Laden's, I've got to stop mentioning him, but he's obviously a high bar to set. But I think Michael Fish is a good one. I think I'm pretty happy with that.
I prefer him over Prince William. Do I prefer him over Gaffney? Probably not, to be honest.
Fair enough.
I'm ranking my celeb fans so far, I'd go bin Laden, Gaffney, Fish, Cameron. Slash William.
How many other lists in the world has the top three been Bin Laden, Dean Gaffney and Michael Fish? That's a hell of a list, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Imagine putting that out on the internet, right? Here's the top three list. Guess the category.
What would the family fortunes question have to be for those all to be the top three answers?
Anyway, let's hit us with number three then.
Number three is that in 1988, former Brighton goalkeeper Perry Digweed almost died during a game after a studs-up challenge on him caused a torn urethra that caused him to lose 4.5 pints of blood, needed 4 operations and spent 3 weeks in hospital and needed to wear a catheter for weeks afterwards.
Ouch.
Indeed, right. That's what I thought. Apparently, he couldn't lie down for 3 weeks after the incident.
I've just crossed my legs. Who was that against?
I haven't got a clue. What a bizarre question to ask me, though. Why does it matter who it's against? Huddersfield, typical.
If a player basically takes out my goalkeeper's penis. If a team, I kind of want to know which player, which team. I want to.
It wasn't a foul. No. Hang on. It wasn't a foul. It was a 50-50.
Right.
Yeah.
Even so.
Yeah, there was no malice intent, I don't think. But apparently, he, despite the severity of the injury, because back then these were real men who played football, weren't they?
Indeed.
He walked off the pitch.
Nice.
Before sort of realising that he had a bit of a serious issue. But he did. He was told that he'd probably never play again, but he was back in the team.
I'm sure there's a few things he was told he'd never do again.
Of all the things, I think lying down would probably be the most problematic, wouldn't it?
Right, yeah. So this is what I've just got from Google. Steve Gatting's weak back pass allowed West Bromwich Albion's John Paskin to fire at goal. He shot, but his boot collided with a very vulnerable part of Digweed's body. Steve Gatting's weak back pass. I bet Perry Digweed. In fact, I'm sure Mrs. Digweed probably still hates Steve Gatting to this day.
I'm sure Steve Gatting is related to Mike.
Oh, it's just we could go down a Wikipedia.
No one wants to listen to a Wikipedia hole, do they? But I'm sure Steve Gatting is related to Mike. But weirdly, the only other similar incident I'm aware of to this actually happened at a game I was at about 10 years ago, Crawley versus Gillingham on Boxing Day. Everything happens on Boxing Day. Our midfielder, Chris Whelpdale, had his, and you might want to cross your legs here. Again, I don't think it was a foul, and we didn't know it happened at the time until we got home and saw it was trending on social media. Our midfielder Chris Whelpdale suffered a torn ball sack through a challenge.
Oh.
A completely innocent challenge, I think. But yeah, it split open his sack.
Wow. Okay. I feel sick.
Yeah. But Digweed lost 4.5 pints of blood. That's a lot of blood, isn't it?
He must be packing. I mean, fair play, Perry Digweed.
I don't know. Perry Digweed played for Liverpool.
No.
Perry Digweed played for Liverpool on loan, I think. He played a few games on loan when, let's say, Bruce Grobbelaar was, it might have been Clements back then. But anyway, their goalkeeper was injured and they got Perry Digweed on loan.
Wow. Is that been certified on Wikipedia?
Yeah, that's a fact. He's appeared for Liverpool. He also, one disappointing upshot of his injury was that for the rest of his career, he had to wear tracksuit trousers when he played in goal.
Why would a penis injury mean you have to wear tracksuit trousers?
Well, maybe he had to wear some kind of protection around that area.
Right.
That would have looked odd wearing just shorts. I don't know.
Makes sense.
Do you remember the old Crystal Palace goalkeeper, Corrali, who always wear tracksuit trousers? But they were like sort of, they looked like 99p, really cheap, horrible tracksuit trousers, didn't they?
They did.
That were just sort of, as soon as they got wet, they just go really heavy and horrible.
And this conversation has reminded me of the time when my brother almost got his testicles removed by the NHS.
Did he?
He went in there to the doctors pain down there. Turned out he had twisted testicles. So he went to the pipe's got twisted. So he went down to the hospital, and the doctor's like, you know, I can perform a quick surgery on you right now, or you can come back in a week under general anaesthetic. My brother's like, oh, what's the quick surgery? Like, what we'll do is we'll slice it open, we'll untwist them, and because there's a risk of them going back, we'll staple them to the sack and then stitch you back up again. And my brother's like, yeah, that doesn't sound like a small surgery. I don't think you've built it correctly there. Yeah, put me under general anaesthetic. Anyway, a week later, he goes into the hospital. They had an appointment 24 hours before where they talk him through it, which is a bit weird. And, you know, they say, oh, so what is it we're doing for you tomorrow? And my brother's like, okay, well, I don't know the medical term for this, but, and he explains. And then the surgeon looks down at his notes and says, you mean we're not removing them? And my brother's like, no, you're definitely not removing them. And I think he just goes, well, this is wrong then, and just starts typing away at the computer. And my brother's like, excuse me, can we like have a bit of an inquest here? Because the guy, you know, didn't really seem like the guy was, oh yeah, well, the computer notes are wrong. Anyway, the guy goes off and he could just hear this nurse shouting, but his handwriting's so messy. And sorry, going a little bit off topic from Brighton Hove Albion there. And anyway, so that got set. And then the next day, my brother's in there. He said he was literally just talking to everyone. Like, you know, the cleaner would walk past. He's like, do not remove my testicles. Just everyone he was speaking to before he went under. My God. Poor
just
boy.
Just to make sure. Boy. Oh, that'd be like, that's some kind of horror film scenario. If you woke up and they were gone.
I mean, you hear that all the time, don't you? Somebody's got cancer, will remove the left leg, and they wake up, wait, you removed my right leg. Oh, I mean, that stuff happens a lot.
I'm not sure I hear that all the time.
Okay, well, not all the time, but I mean, it happens a lot.
Does that happen?
There are a lot of cases. If you're in Google, yeah, get onto Google and, you know, wrong limb removed and all that. I say that. I think nowadays there are a lot more safeguards in there. One reason why they write down
left or right before they remove it.
Yeah, and use pen on the part of the body, don't they? Like, if you ever see that, I think that's part.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, fair enough.
But there fair we go. Enough. There we go. Brighton Hove Albion.
That's coming off Brighton quite well, isn't it?
So how do we think in terms of, you know, first of all, you know, I did say at the beginning, so we should. Are Brighton Hove Albion interesting? We need an answer for that. You think yes? Why?
Because I think this has been the most fun I've had doing one of these so far.
Okay. So, but is that Brighton Hove Albion's fault, or are they responsible for that? Is that just
yes?
We're feeling more okay. Fair enough. Definitive.
I think I've enjoyed talking about Brighton more than I have the other clubs.
Okay. But how? Because Arsenal are lineal title holders. What do you think?
This is tricky. So I'm really, I'd put Brighton on a par, so I'm willing to let you have the final call on that.
Well, okay, a couple of things I'll say there. One, I'm still leaning, I've got to stop mentioning celebrity fans, but, you know, Arsenal, you know, they were pioneers in certain bits of football. The Brighton factor, I agree, I've had fun, but the Brighton factor, you know, they 70 miles away from home's good, but, you know, a wooden walkway, I feel like Arsenal's facts are better. And one thing I will say, you know, the older adage, like in boxing, you know, like, if you're the challenger, you have to win the belt away from the title holder, you know. So if you are saying on a par, I think no, you've not done enough. You need, and you know, obviously Arsenal got lucky alphabetical order, but yeah, you need to take that belt off them. So I'm going to say Arsenal are still the lineal champions.
But Eddie Hearn would call it an absolute war, wouldn't he? Eddie Hearn calls everything an absolute war, doesn't he?
He knows what he's doing. He's a good salesman.
he's like the most... Derek Chisora's next fight will be an absolute war. I can guarantee it. Anyway, so Brighton haven't dislodged Arsenal.
They've not. But you know what? I'm pretty confident about next week. So you've got Burnley, and Burnley, like Arsenal, are a club with a lot of history. Go back to when football was very interesting. You know, Burnley were around there in the 10s, the 20s, the 30s. So I've got a feeling Burnley has got some pretty cool stuff that we can uncover next week.
I suspect as well they might have some interesting fans, Burnley.
I've
got a feeling I reckon Burnley might. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Burnley could be could be dark horses in this one.
Nice. Well, Mr. Day, thank you very much for today. I've enjoyed that a lot as well. And everybody else, yeah, please tune in next week to find out how interesting are Burnley. Goodbye.
Goodbye.